World's on fire. Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, we're fighting through a few technical difficulties here this morning. If there weren't technical difficulties, there wouldn't be any difficulties. We're excited to have Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers is going to join us here. He was in here just momentarily, and we had having some trouble with his camera, but he'll get back in here with us. And as most of you know, Lord, let the words of our lips and the meditation of our heart be pleasing in your sight today, in Jesus' name. I don't do a lot of guests. I don't do a lot of guests just because I don't do a lot of guests. And we try to do an analysis of what's going on. We like to hear from what you guys think. We don't do a lot of guests. But I was prompted, certainly by the Holy Spirit last week. I thought, man, Stuart Rhodes and I, of Oath Keepers, boy, has the federal government, the old federal government, whatever that means, the Biden administration, boy, have they turned Oath Keepers into villains. And I go back a few years where the Oath Keepers were the Oath Keepers, man, and still are the Oath Keepers, by the way. And Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers, I got to know Stuart, I don't know, God, 2019, maybe back in there, and just a down-to-earth great guy, as an attorney, Dartmouth, I think he went to. I got his bio here. I'll throw all that up here in a second. But I just out of the blue just texted him the other day, said, hey, Stu, how about coming on? Come on the show. And so he is joining us here this morning. So if you just hang in there with us, a little bit of fighting through a little bit of difficulties. I don't have anything on my screen, Johnny. I don't know if that matters. There isn't anything up on my screen right now. If we can, while we're waiting for Stuart to get in there, maybe I can pull up his info. There's Stuart Rhodes. By the way, you want to give money to a worthy cause? Stuart's going to talk to us about how long he was in prison, and unjustly, of course. And yeah, how do you rebuild your life after that? How do you rebuild your life after you spend 6 months in prison for something that you didn't really do, and then try to come out and regather your life and get it up and running? So we're going to leave that up there and give you an opportunity to be able to do a give, send, go to help fund what's going on with Stuart. Pull his bio up there real quickly, Spence. Has Stuart joined us again? Is he back in here? All right, he's working with him right now. So for those of you who don't know, Stuart, he ain't no flunky. When we started Oath Keepers, the idea was to make our government keep its oath, and particularly former soldiers, sailors, Marines, Coast Guard. Keep your oath, man. You swore to take an oath to defend the Constitution. And the mission is in the name. They're Oath Keepers. And Stuart, just like so many of us, showed up on January 6th. It's not like he piles his team into a bus and drives them all to D.C. That's not the way that it works. They meet there just like we met there. And they went there to I'll let Stuart tell the story when he gets in here. But they went there to make sure things went peaceful, because they had word that maybe Antifa was going to show up, yada, yada, yada. And through a series of events, who knows how the heck that happened, Stuart Rhodes gets arrested, thrown in the freaking gulag, and fighting to get out of it. Can you throw this bio up there, Johnny? I think John's probably multitasking right now. He's trying to help Stuart get in there. We had Stuart in earlier, but we didn't have his video. So they're working, trying to get that. Stuart, are you, bear with me here a second. He's a U.S. Army paratrooper, disabled veteran, and disabled in a right jump while doing rough terrain parachuting, and he's an ex-firefighter. He's a Yale Law School, there he is, Yale Law School graduate, Yale Law Research Scholar.
Don't hold that against me, guys.
This ain't some guy that just fell off the turn of truck Worked on D.C. staff of Congressman Ron Paul, clerk for Arizona Supreme Court, founder of Oath Keepers, had 40,000 members at its peak. It probably did everything they could to try to destroy that. I'll let you go there in a second, Spence, as soon as we get you in, get going. Innocent J6 political prisoner. We're going to talk about that here today. Because, folks, you know, I made a journey. We were there on J6. And I took some guys. We went back a year later. And all of Washington, D.C. believes that was an armed insurrection. All of Washington, D.C. It was the most unbelievable thing, the information that they've thrown out there. And we're going to keep flashing up. Hang on a minute. So Spencer, or Stuart, one thing Stuart wants to do is we want to bring some pressure to get him a pardon. And a pardon. The president already pardoned a bunch of guys. Well, they didn't give the commutative sentence, but they didn't give him a pardon. So we'll talk about that a little bit too. He was sentenced to 18 years. This is unbelievable. Served 3 years. Unbelievable. 3 years in prison. And then President Trump commuted him on January 20th. And he's praying for a full pardon. And also, we're going to flash up there on the screen. Folks, throw $20 Stuart's way. Man, he's trying to rebuild his life. He's laid a lot of it on the line. Stuart, they didn't come here to hear me talk. So I'm going to just open it up. First of all, thanks for joining us. And I want you to know, brother, I thought about you a long time. Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say sitting here on the outside, but I thought about you all the time when you were going through that stuff. What a freaking mess that was, because I know what kind of character you have, what kind of guy you are. And if they can take a guy like you, a guy like Stuart Rhodes, and turn you into a villain, man. Stuart, God bless you. Thanks for getting up. And by the way, folks, he's in Texas, and he got up an hour early. He said, where's the link? So if he falls asleep on us, we'll understand why.
Stuart, these folks, you
see there's 84 people. Stuart, there are thousands that are watching, okay? These people are just in the queue to be able to talk to you a little bit. So thanks for joining us, Stu, and tell us your story, brother.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Coach?
Good
to see you again. Yeah, it's been a while, huh?
It has. Yeah. At least I've been laying in my bed. You've been laying in a different bunk.
That's right. No, so, I mean, there were a bunch of us that, everybody on J6 was demonized and grossly overcharged. It was ridiculous. So the first thing I want to say out of the gate is that while I was in prison, I was concerned. I didn't go inside the Capitol. I didn't fight any cops that day. But I knew guys that I served time with that did. And how do you get pro-law enforcement Trump supporters to fight police? You have the police do things that are grossly excessive force and dishonorable. Yeah. Like hitting a unconscious woman in the head with a club. Things like that. Or killing Ashley Babbitt. So murder. So that's the backdrop of J6. It is absurd. It's ridiculous. So the way I frame J6 is that we were there to righteously protest a stolen election, an illegal, unconstitutional, fraudulent election, a coup. They committed a coup in 2020. I call it the COVID coup. They used COVID as their excuse to directly violate state laws in multiple swing states. And by doing that, by violating the laws that were passed by the state legislature, that triggered a violation of Article 2 of the Constitution. That's the bottom line right there. People need to understand this was a grossly, I don't need to prove the fraud. It's ridiculous. Mainstream media is always like, you know, no one proved there was a sufficient fraud to change the election. Well, when they violate the laws that are passed to make fraud more difficult or to make fraud easier to discover, of course it's harder for you to prove the fraud. So, but I don't even need to see that. I just know that they, by their own admission, directly violating the state election laws across the country. They called it changing the rules, but just violating the state election laws. And that's why Texas sued Pennsylvania. The Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, that's where I live, is Texas. He sued Pennsylvania, and that lawsuit was joined by, I believe, 20 other states. And that should have settled it. So when one state sues another, that's under the Supreme Court's original jurisdiction, they become the trial court. And just like back in 2000 with Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court should have settled the issue one way or the other. But they didn't. They ducked their responsibility. Only Justice Alito and Justice Thomas wanted or insisted on taking the case. And they're like, we don't have discretion not to take this case. This is under our original jurisdiction. We're not an appellate court in this matter. We are the trial court. But Justice Roberts and Kavanaugh and Barrett went along with the lefties and just ducked their duty. So that's what threw us into a constitutional crisis. By them ducking their duty, threw us into a situation where we had an unconstitutional, illegal election that they're not fixing. And so that's why we were there to protest. And we were there in November and December and January. And us oath keepers were there to protect people. We were there protecting events, speakers, and Trump supporters from Antifa in the streets in November, the big rally in November, the big rally in December, and then again on January 6th. That's why we were there. And on J6, we were there to protect two permitted events on Capitol grounds, right there on the grass. One was Latinos for Trump, about a block north of the Capitol. And the other one was the Allie Alexander rally that was taking place right outside the East Capitol door. That's why we were there. And that's why our security teams, they were tasked with protecting both those events. One large security team from Florida, led by Kelly Meigs, was tasked with escorting speakers from President Trump's Ellipse rally. The VIP speakers for Allie Alexander's event were at Trump's rally, President Trump's rally, in the VIP section. So our guys were there with them, and then they then walked them. This was planned way ahead of time to walk them to their own event on the east side of the Capitol. It's an important point, is that there were already permitted events all around the Capitol on that day. And there had been in November and December, the exact same pattern. Like in November, there was a big rally in Freedom Plaza, and then everyone marched to the Capitol grounds and then stood in the streets and filled the grass back in November and listened to speakers in front of the Supreme Court. So that same pattern was done all three times. And the bad guys knew that. So what happened on J6, they knew that Trump supporters were going to be going to the Capitol because there were permitted events all around the Capitol as usual. And what I look at, this is a manipulated event, the righteous, legitimate protest, as there was in November and December, that the bad guys manipulated the crowd to make sure they got inside and made sure that they fought with the police. How do you do that? You have officers on your payroll, whether it's CIA or whatever other element of deep state, following their instructions to agitate the crowd from that side. Then you have provocateurs in the crowd and behind the crowd, urging them on. We can talk about some of them. So that's what's coming out now. You've got guys, special forces trained K-6ers like Jeffrey McKellips, Jeremy Brown, and also Rocky, who I just met the other day at a reunion here. They all saw the same thing. They're like, okay. We're looking at the video afterwards, and they're like, this is what we've seen overseas, what we've done overseas, regime change, color revolutions overseas, where crowds are manipulated, provocateurs steer the crowd. That's what they saw, and that's what I see, too, when I look at some of this footage. So that's the best way to look at J6, is a manipulated event to manufacture their Reichstag fire moment to distract and deflect attention from their own coup and shut down any challenges in Congress. They recessed and then came back and reconvened, but they didn't reconvene following the normal rules, and they didn't follow any normal process after that. That is a rubber stamp. So that was all orchestrated to deflect attention from what they did, to shut down challenges in Congress, then to try to keep President Trump from being able to run for office again by disqualifying him under the 14th Amendment or put him in prison. And that's why it was unprecedented. No president in the United States history has been charged with a crime. They not only charged him in two different states, New York and Georgia, but also in Florida federal court and in D.C. He was charged in D.C. And all of our prosecutions really were just a stepping stone to get to President Trump. They put us, I spent over a year in solitary confinement, and my co-defense was the same way. Kelly Meigs, Jessica Watkins, Kenny Harrelson, and a lot of the Proud Boys too. Ricky Tarrio, Joe Biggs, Dominic Pozzola.
Those are good guys, right? Stuart Proud Boys are good, good guys.
We've worked together over the years throughout the entire Trump administration. Antifa, the left, radical left terrorists, have been attacking Trump supporters in the streets, including in Washington, D.C., but all over the country. And so we worked like 9 prior security operations in D.C. without a hitch, hundreds of them across the country. In fact, we started our first security operation in D.C. during the Trump administration was on January the 20th, 2017, wow. President Trump's inauguration day, first inauguration day. We were on the streets of D.C. And so the Proud Boys have, anyways, a lot, very similar mission. they go out there. They're more, a little more aggressive at street fight. So, and I don't hold that against them. Our ethos was, because we have a lot of retired police officers and military veterans, our ethos was fire professionals. We don't seek to fight with them. We don't even respond. They yell, we don't yell back. It's a little bit different vibe, a little different way of doing things. But I look at it like a yin and yang synergy. We worked together with the Proud Boys many times. They're good guys. So yeah, but here's what happened on J6. The Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, the two groups the left has hated for forever. Since I started Oath Keepers in 2009, since McGinnis started Proud Boys, forgot what year that was. But they've hated both groups because we shut them down in the street. We protect people from them. We prevent their terrorists from preventing the free speech of Trump supporters. We've been very successful. And when Act for America, for example, did their march against Sharia all over the United States, we had speakers who were ex-Muslims, who are now Christians, speaking the truth about Islam, about how radical it really is. We protected all of them too. So the left hates us for all those reasons. And so they seized on the fact that some of our guys went in, both Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, to make us the poster boys and the fall guys for J6. So like the Oath Keepers, for example, they didn't go in until Congress had already recessed, so they didn't cause Congress to recess. They went in after other people had already gone inside. They didn't lead anything. They walked in through doors that were open from the inside on the east side of Capitol doors. So they didn't breach anything. So all the propaganda put out there that the Oath Keepers led the attack and the Oath Keepers breached the doors, and the Oath Keepers were violent. None of our guys assaulted, punched, kicked, or anything. Only one guy, Josh James, lost his temper and grabbed a hold of one of the police officers and yanked on him. That's it. Didn't punch him, didn't kick him, didn't even fight him. And yet we were called one of the more violent radical groups. It's all complete nonsense.
So Stuart, let's get specifically into your particular case. Did you ever really have a trial? Was it a monkey trial,
Stuart? Oh no, we had show trials. The judges in D.C.
You didn't go in. You didn't go into the building.
Did not go in.
Didn't
tell anyone else to. Didn't fight with anybody. It took them a year to cook up fake evidence against me. They had to pressure and coerce other Oath Keepers into false confessions and then false testimony. Like Josh James, my guy's mentioned, was an Alabama leader. Todd Wilson was one of our North Carolina leaders. Those two did plead out to seditious conspiracy, which is the worst charge. They made a deal. They didn't do any prison time. In exchange for that, they pled guilty to something they did not do, which helped to reinforce the false narrative. Then they signed a stack of lies saying that I had planned since November of 2020 to attack the Capitol. Complete garbage. Oddly, neither one of them were put on the stand at our trial, but they gave the false rhetoric, the false narrative legs. The media could say, see, two more have confessed that it really was a conspiracy. And then they kept all of us in solitary confinement. I was in solitary confinement for over a year. And while in solitary confinement, we all got letters that said from the prosecution saying that you've been charged with seditious conspiracy, which is basically the same as treason. Therefore, we're going to ask the judge for life in prison. So that's how they tried to scare and pressure people. Want to crush your will with solitary confinement. Want to threaten you with life in prison, what they want. And they said at the end of the letter, oh, you have whatever it was, 10 days, 14 days to make a deal. So they wanted to have the other Oath Keepers turn on me, but Kelly Meigs was offered that if he would say that I told him to go inside, that he can go home. And to his honor, he told him to go pound sand. He wouldn't do it. So that's the first step is coerce people into false confession. And they got some. But then they put us through a show trial. D.C. is hyper left, hyper radical left, and political activists. A lot of almost everybody on the jury either worked for the government or knew someone who worked for the government. They all said that they went to Black Lives Matter protest and the pink hat protest against Trump, March for Our Lives anti-gun protest. So these are pretty radical leftist jurors that are activist jurors, and the judges described all of the people of D.C. as the victims of J6. And so here they are drawing the jury pool from what they say is the victim pool. It's kind of like if you were accused of robbing the Walmart and they drew the jury and everyone was at the Walmart on the day of the robbery. So even the judges describe themselves as the victims of January 6th. But so they, but they still, they refused to do the venue change, to let us use the trial out of
there. You were guilty, right, Stuart? You guys were guilty. Oh, they didn't know what the evidence said.
Right.
They were going to get you guys.
Yeah, Orange Man bad, Orange Man follower or supporter bad. Exactly right. So, but the reason why they didn't want to have venue change is, of course, to guarantee convictions, but also they didn't want any precedent that President Trump could point to when they put him on trial. That was their ultimate goal. And I remember telling guys in prison, other J6ers, they're going to charge President Trump too. And they're like, no way. They're not going to charge President Trump. I said, you watch. That's what this is leading up to. They're doing this to us to lead up to him. It's like a pyramid, like a RICO case. They're creating a false conspiracy between us, the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, and President Trump. He's a cherry on top. And then, but they build up to him and they want to turn us against him and make us do false confessions. I am a Christian. I will never bear false witness. And frankly, I'm also damn stubborn. I will never admit to a crime I did not commit. So I went to trial. I knew we were going to be found guilty, but it didn't matter.
So, Stuart, who is they? We hear that they do this, they did this. Who, in your opinion, who's they?
Well, I mean, obviously, it was the Biden regime. Now, you want to look back behind the curtain, who's pulling his strings? I called him out and did open letters to President Trump in November, December, and January, urging him to revoke the Insurrection Act, to seize the evidence of a fraudulent election, and to do a mass declassification exposure of all the dirty secrets that the CIA, NSA, and FBI have on politicians and judges that they use to control them. So I called him out as a Chi-Com puppet. I think that's what he was and still is to this day. But who's pulling the strings? One, communist China. He paid $1 million to his son Hunter. But two, I would say Obama. That was the third Obama term, because obviously Biden was, we knew he was incompetent from the very beginning, but now it's coming out, now the whole world knows he's completely incompetent. So who was pulling the strings? I think it was Biden, Obama behind the scene, and then behind that also communist China.
So, Stuart, let me stop you right there, folks. Again, the give sin goes up there. Stuart's life's been destroyed. And, this dude's an attorney. He ain't no flunky, right?
Ex-attorney. I'm a recovering lawyer. Like being a recovering alcoholic. And I say that for a good reason. I think the legal system in this country is broken and incredibly corrupt. And that's, I want to call that out too. And not just on the prosecution side, but the defense side too. The defense attorneys encourage their clients to be dishonorable, to not testify to help other people they know are innocent, and then even to turn on them and lie. They're all suborning perjury. They're all committing conspiracy to commit perjury. The defense attorneys cooperate with the prosecution. They cook up a false story. They know it's false. They have their client sign on to a lie. And that's a crime, but they're all getting away with it. It's disgusting.
Stuart, what's explain? We've had several, couple guys that have been locked up. You say solitary confinement.
Right.
What does that mean, Stuart? What's that like?
So what that means is you're, like when I was first arrested, I was put in a cell by myself. You're in a cell.
For years.
It's like being locked in imagine being locked in your bathroom. No windows, no sunlight, just locked in your bathroom for a freaking year. I didn't have my feet on the grass and my face under open sky for a year. When that's done to Americans overseas by other countries, our State Department condemns that as torture, because that's what it is. It's meant to break you.
So, Stuart, it is. Let's back up a little bit, Stuart. For those who, you know, we were there on J6. I didn't go in. We could have gone in. We had a lot of people there. The doors were open. People were walking in and out. Stuart, how did they stick it on you, man? Some guys turn state's evidence. I understand that.
They use my free speech. They use those open letters to President Trump. All of that was created in front of the jury. And of course, out of the gate, the opening argument was that, you know, the Oath Keepers led the attack and all this stuff. But at the end, the jury was told, they presented no evidence of any kind of plan and no actual testimony of any kind of plan. And instead, they relied on this. They told the jury that they could infer an implied conspiracy, an even unspoken conspiracy, to have been formed as the Oath Keepers walked up these Capitol steps to go inside. The jury was invited to say, okay, as they walked up those steps, we can infer that they came to an agreement to, you know, resist with force the authority of the United States government and to obstruct an official proceeding. No actual evidence, no actual confession of a conversation. And they were told, and you may use their speech, all their political speech, as state of mind evidence. Just basically invited the jury to find us guilty because we don't like Biden and we think the election was stolen. That's what they were invited to do. And that's what they did. There was no instruction on free speech about the Brandenburg standard, that speech is protected under the Brandenburg decision. It was 1967. Speech is protected. This is one I learned at Yale Law School. It was like the big benchmark of free speech for protests. Speech is protected unless it incites imminent violence that's also likely to occur. So as long as we had communists for decades relying on free speech, took openly call for revolution. You had BLM all over the country, burning down Antifa, burning down cities, attacking the courthouse in Oregon, trying to burn it down in Portland, attacking the White House. They attacked the White House so severely on May 31st, 2020, that they drove President Trump into the bunker under the White House. Him and his family were evacuated down into the bunker. That's how severely they attacked the White House. Talk about a friggin' insurrection. Talk about using force to resist with the authority of the United States government. And none of them were charged with seditious conspiracy.
Yeah.
So they used that against us to manufacture a false insurrection that President Trump cast as the kingpin and us cast as his lieutenants. That's why only members of Oath Keepers were charged with seditious conspiracy. Even though my guys, none of them punched a cop or bludgeoned anybody at all, they still... It's identity crime. The Oath Keepers and Proud Boys were tagged as the bad guys at the parade in front of the media, and that's why we were charged with that charge. It's just identity crime. I can show the union. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime.
Yep. Hey, folks, I'm going to open it up and let you ask some questions to Stuart. Let me go back here real quick.
There's so much. We were not allowed to show. We were not allowed to show the jury the video of Ray Epps on the night of the 5th actually saying and doing what I was accused of. Like calling on people to go inside the Capitol, trying to get people to agree to a plan to do that. He did what we were accused of. We weren't allowed to show the jury that. We couldn't mention his name. The judge wouldn't let us mention his name. So, and we had witnesses who were going to call the testimony. The judge would not let us call them the testimony because they did not fit with the narrative.
Stewards, what's happened to Oath Keepers? Is it basically falling apart? Did they scare everybody away?
Well, sure, because what happened is, first they deplatformed us. We were completely deplatformed and demonetized. After Jessica Watkins was arrested, my credit card processing company that I use, they called me and said, hey, man, you have to disavow Watkins. If you don't publicly disavow Watkins, you're going to lose the ability to even have credit card transactions online. You'll be blackballed across the industry. And I said, A, Watkins is innocent until proven guilty. B, I don't believe Watkins did anything except maybe trespass, not even that, because the doors were open from someone from the inside. No cop told them they couldn't be inside. So I said, no, I refuse to do that. And we lost all our ability to process credit card. And then we had our bank account shut down. So it's an absolute deplatforming. It's Chinese social credit score. It's here. It's already here, guys. That's what they did to us. And they did that to other groups, not just the Oath Keepers, but across the political right. In 2020, the mask came off. They went full totalitarian. This is under President Trump's presidency. Keep in mind, they sent in paid informants into both Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. While President Trump was still president, they tried to recruit Jeremy Brown to become a paid snitch against us. In his honor, he refused, and he exposed it. He put the recording out there. That's why they came after him extra hard. But I found out at trial, I remember to call a key witness who was a leader in Oath Keepers, right there at the very top. I'm still under a gag order. I didn't even say this person's name. But the New York Times took care of that, because the New York Times found a story. You look at the New York Times and find it. But I was going to call this person to come testify for me. And then the prosecution said, well, actually, that person works for us. That was completely floored. This is what they do. And that was all done during Trump's own administration. The deep state was already running their game, doing what they want to do, even while President Trump's in office. This is the key point. The deep state doesn't really care who the president is. The plan is to run the clock out again on President Trump. And they hope that he will not be able to actually purge out all of their minions, so they come back into power. Well, same. This is the problem with what's going on right now with the FBI. I don't see them firing the 5,000 agents who were sent after us. They should all be fired. What I'm seeing right now, from sadly, And Jack Patel and Dan Bongino, are they giving them a pass? They actually promoted the main agent in charge of all of our prosecutions and persecutions. They promoted that guy. And Cash Patel, in his interview with Fox News, he's like, well, you know, he pushed back against his superior, but he can only do so much or he loses his job.
Yeah,
I'm like, wait a minute. The standard should be refuse unlawful orders, period. That's what the founders intended. That's why they put the oath obligation in the Constitution itself. It wasn't refuse unlawful orders or defend the Constitution unless you might lose your job. You need to do what Carl Serafin did. He refused to participate. That's why he got fired. So I don't give anyone a pass. They should all be fired. It's ridiculous to have those people left in place. Because all they're going to do is sit around and smile and nod and then wait for Jack Patel and Bongino to leave. They'll go right back to business as usual, persecuting the political right like they used to do.
Stuart, it reminds me of the great movie Cool Hand Luke. I'm a little bit older than you. Maybe you didn't see it. But when they got Luke in the box and the old guy walks in there and puts down the pee jar for Luke can pee, he said, sorry, Luke, just doing my job.
Yep.
And the greatest line ever, mm-hmm. Luke said, calling it your job, don't make it right.
Hey,
that's really where we are, isn't it?
I had multiple corrections officers apologize to me, say, we know you're innocent. We know you shouldn't be here, but we can't do anything about it. And if I tried to climb the fence and escape, they'd have shot me. You know? But no, I had no interest in doing that. It's just, the whole thing is disgusting. But definitely those agents in the FBI would be purged out. And there should be a task force. They had a task force against us. Where's the task force to go into the election of 2020, investigate it, and go into the J6 setup and all the persecution of the political right, you know, against abortion protesters, against people that are protesting against trans story hour. Where's the task force to investigate all that? It does not exist. Where's the task force in the DOJ? It does not exist. I don't understand why not.
So, Stuart, you were given a commutation, not a pardon, right?
That's right.
How can we help you with that?
So there were 14 of us. President Trump pardoned everyone except for 14 of us who were Oath Keepers or Proud Boys. So Rick Vitario got a pardon. I'm glad he did. But the rest of his guys, Dominic Pozzola, Joe Biggs, and Nordine, on my side, you know, my co-defendants, Kelly Meggs, Kenny Harrelson, Jessica Watkins, Ed Vallejo, a bunch of guys on our side. There's 14 of us total, but they're all Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. We're just given commutations. What that means is your term of prison is ended. You're you know, it's like time served. You're let out, but you're still a felon. Like I'm still a felon. I can't own a gun. I can't vote in Texas. In fact, I lost all my veterans benefits. They sent a nasty letter to me, the VA did, while I was in solitary, saying that, once again, because this is the same as treason, you've been stricken all, I'm a disabled vet, service connected, had a, you know, with a perishing accident. So, but they said, you've lost all your benefits and I can't even be buried in a veterans cemetery. So it's just disgusting. So I don't know why that happened. I'm just guessing that someone in President Trump's circle didn't want that to the, here's the thing, by commuting us only, and we're grateful to be out of prison, but the problem is it helps sustain the false narrative because, and I've even seen this, they didn't get a pardon, so they must have really done something wrong.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. So now we put in, now that Ed Martin, thank God, is the new pardon attorney, we put in pardon applications, and all of us need to be pardoned. I believe there's like 12 of us left, either 11 or 12 of us left who still need a pardon, and I would encourage people to support everyone, no man left behind. Every one of those guys needs to get a pardon.
Stu, what kept you going when, again, folks, we'll open it up, let you jump in here in a second. What kept you going, Stuart, when 30 years, dude, 30 years, they take you in there, they lock you up. How the hell do you keep your sanity thinking, I'm going to be here for 30 years?
No, 20. No, it was 18-year sentence. 18
years. Well, that's long enough, 18 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How'd you make it through that, dude?
One, my faith. I always kept in mind the story of Joseph being sold into slavery by his brothers and then being, you know, falsely accused by his master's wife and thrown in prison. But God will use for good what man needs for evil.
That's right.
So I kept that in mind. I think that's proved out. It's true for President Trump. It's true for us. It's true for the whole MAGA movement. The more they hammered him and tried to destroy him, the stronger he got. And the same goes for us. You know, I'm not afraid to go to prison. I've been there. Been there, done that. I'm not afraid. My brothers feel the same way. So there's that. And also, as a soldier, I look at myself as a prisoner of war against domestic energy competition. And just as in wartime, I would not have hated the enemy, and I would not have let them crush me. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of breaking my spirit. But I just, that's buckled up. And I know Jeremy Brown feels the same way. I know Kenny Harrelson feels the same way. I know a lot of other veterans feel the same freaking way. We saw ourselves, I think, correctly as prisoners of war.
So Stuart, here's the truth. We got you go up there. You lost everything. You didn't work for however long.
Well, 3 years I was out of work. But so one thing to understand, folks, is it says 38,000 been raised. That's why I was in prison. A lot of that was, spent on commissary. I don't have 38,000 bucks in my pocket. Just so you understand. That sustained me. Because you have to, if you want good food, you got to buy it yourself. So our commissary, our commissary bills were pretty big. I'd spend about $300 a month on food. It's just making sure
But since they didn't give you a pardon, you can't get a job, you're a felon, you can't have a gun.
Well, no, I'm working for Condemned USA as a national spokesman. Thank God for that.
Dennis Evans. Oh, talk about that. What is Condemned USA?
Condemned USA was started by Dennis Evans, who's another J6er, an early J6er, who didn't do as much prison time. But he started Condemned USA to help other J6ers. So raise money for lawyers, donate money to commissary. In fact, Jen Baker, one of his employees, came and picked me up. She didn't come visit me in prison, but she came and picked me up, did not have it released. I was commuted, like a lot of the other guys. I got out the same night, January 20th, 2025. President Trump is sworn in.
Man.
So, no, Condemned USA is a good outfit. I would work for them if they weren't.
Pull
so
that
we're,
up.
We're doing our best to, there are still political prisoners in this country, all over the country, anywhere the left's in power. Like, look at Tina Peters in Colorado, she blew the whistle on election fraud, and they put her in prison for 9 friggin' years under Colorado state law. So we just did an amicus brief in support of her being removed, that case being removed to federal court, then hopefully that can be dismissed. So Condemned USA is like the ACLU for our side. I really encourage folks to support them.
There's a group at Stuart started Condemned USA.
No, I didn't start that. Travis Evans started it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I worked, but I worked with him as their national spokesman. So, I lost everything. So, all of us are like that. We're always rolling our lives. And so I would encourage people to donate to all of the advocates and those for all the J6ers. And I really encourage them to donate directly to the J6ers. There are some scam artists out there. I'm not going to get into a circular firing squad. I'm not going to name names, but just know. You go straight to a person's individual gifts and go, you know it's going to be down. If you give it to somebody else, they might not get it.
Yeah. Amen. Just amen. Dr. Paul, come on in.
Nice to hear a fellow military guy. I'm a recovering physician.
he's in the state of Maine. He's in the state of Maine. Go ahead.
So I was in New York, and you probably don't know, but I got shot by a rogue cop, and then they threw me in jail because, of course, they can't be found wrong on that. My initial lawyer was completely woke and completely against me. You must have had the same problem on your end of things. Did you guys have lawyers?
A lot of the J6ers have that problem. My lawyers were not lefties, but I'll say this. A lot of the J6ers had, like you said, lefty lawyers who really just hated them and like public defenders. And so that's why guys were scrambling to raise money. And you had people raising like Gibson, Gibson Goes and Gateway Pundit helped quite a bit. And like a lot of micro defenders were able to raise $100,000 a piece, and that was all spent on attorneys. In my Cindy Powell stepped up. Thanks to her, and she paid for my attorneys. But there were a lot of J6ers had either, like you said, woke attorneys that hated their guts, or attorneys that were just basically grifters. Just took $100,000 and did almost nothing for them.
Absolutely. They didn't want to work against the system. Would you agree with that?
Here's the thing about lawyers, and I saw this at Yale Law School, and I saw it in practice. Lawyers tend to be what they call risk averse. That means cowardly. and also incredibly arrogant and focused on their own personal prestige and power. And they don't want to lose any of that. And so they're the worst combination of, like I said, cowardly and arrogant. And they don't listen to their clients, and they also don't fight hard because they're afraid to lose their bar license. And that's what was done. John Mosley, for example, a really good, dedicated lawyer, was the first criminal defense attorney for my co-defendant, Kelly Meggs. He was a fighter. They went after him and got him disbarred. Mm. So that's, you know, their other lawyers were still fighters too, but he was vulnerable because he had a complaint against a black client in Virginia. They took advantage of that and made sure he was disbarred.
Well, it appears
that happened to me in Montana. I was disbarred in Montana too. The same thing happened to me. You know, they took advantage of a client's complaint and make sure they got rid of my bar license too. So
Merrick Garland, you be careful what you say, but Merrick Garland, certainly he was their vengeance to make sure that all those Patriots got scared back into their caves. Would you agree with that?
Well, sure. I mean, the whole point was to, like I said, stop President Trump, deflect attention to what they did, but also to terrorize the MAGA movement. Absolutely. Yep. They wanted to say, and it did, and it worked. We had multiple times. We had witnesses. We were going to call as witnesses. Bam, they didn't get indicted. Kelly Sorrell, for example, was a volunteer legal counsel for Oath Keepers. She didn't go inside the Capitol either. And we were going to bring her in as a witness. She testified to the J6, you know, so-called select committee for at least 6 hours. Of course, that's all destroyed now. It's all gone, right? The testimony to them is gone. But we were going to call her the witness. And then as soon as we announced to put her on a list of witnesses, boom, they indicted her. It happened multiple times. And so other people that we called the witnesses refused to testify. They just pled the fifth. You know, so they would jump up on the stand and plead the fifth and walk away. That's the whole point. That's what the prosecution does. They send FBI agents everywhere in the country to harass our families and our friends and anybody we had done any kind of political activism with. Here in Texas, for example, everyone that knew me that I was close with got a visit from the FBI to intimidate witnesses. And also, it also worked to intimidate the general movement. You know, everyone's afraid now to stand up. We have people deleting on Facebook or on Twitter, deleting any photos they have of me because they're afraid that they'd be associated with me and then they would come to them too.
That's biblical though, right, Stuart? You smite the shepherd and the sheep scatter, and there's no doubt that's exactly what that all whole thing
well,
is about.
Yeah, but it's also just this is what police states do throughout world history, is they terrorize. I mean, read Solzhenitsyn, right? He talks about that. You know, he talks about people cowering in their homes, hoping that the knock was not coming to their door, but instead going to their neighbor's door and doing nothing. And he talked about, you know, how he burned in the camps later.
Yep.
You know, thinking, what if we had realized the full extent of the situation and then we had nothing left to lose but to fight back? He said, but we didn't love freedom enough. That's what he said. And we deserve everything that happened to us afterward. What he said. Yeah.
So same for us.
If you don't stand up, then you're going to wind up with your children and grandchildren living in a dictatorship, and you will be a shame on their memory. You'll be a dark blot in the history of this country if you'll refuse to stand up.
So, folks, look what they did. Go back to the Nazi Holocaust, that whole thing. Look what the lies are able to tell, what they did. Look what they did with COVID. All that stuff, folks. Fear. I tell everybody, lies, deception, and fear. It's how they operate. Right. Rochelle, come in.
And Christ does not give us a freedom of a spirit of fear, right?
That's right, brother, but of power and of love and of a sound mind, brother.
Right.
I'm with you. Rochelle, come on in.
Amen. Good morning, team. Hello, Coach and Stuart. First of all, I'm so sorry that any of this happened to you. I mean, I get stuck in traffic people committed suicide in there. You know,
there was one J6er who committed suicide because he was charged and, you know, he was dealing with that. And then they were going to amp up more charges against him and he just broke and committed suicide.
Yeah. Well, here's my question. You had said you went to Yale, you studied law.
Don't hold that against me, though, please.
I won't. I won't. As a matter of fact, I won't. Everybody can be redeemed. My question is, a simple Google search at the time, you know, on preemptive pardons would have shown results in the past of where presidents have pardoned people. I'm sure you were aware of this. And the fact that Trump did not pardon anyone who was invited to J6, which was everybody. What are your thoughts on that? Because that still strikes a chord with me.
Yeah, right. He could have done that. I mean, there's a lot of things he could have done. I was still trying, even after J6, one last Hail Mary, I wanted him to use his absolute authority to declassify. That's the most powerful weapon he still has to this day. He can go in, because he's the president, he can declassify anything in any files, secret, top secret, above top secret, whatever. He can use that power to this day. There's a lot of power that he has that he's just not using. And I believe President Trump has a good heart. I believe he has the right intent. But he is still surrounded by people. It's not as bad as last time. He's a much better team this time. But still, there are people, weenie lawyers, most likely, in his ear, telling him, oh, yeah, you can't do that. That's going too far. And you got the Republican establishment, too. Look at Tillis, that disgusting senator from North Carolina. That's the one that shot down Ed Martin being able to be the U.S. attorney for D.C. They're afraid of Ed Martin. They didn't want him to be the U.S. attorney in D.C. because they knew he could not for them. He's right there in D.C. Well, once again, what man means for evil, God means for good. Because now Ed Martin is the new U.S. pardon attorney. And he's also the assistant attorney general with the weaponization section in the DOJ. So I'm really looking forward to him doing some good work. So back to your question, though. Yes, President Trump could have done that. He didn't. He could have done a lot of things. He didn't. And the same is true for now. So I think that we have to, give him positive pressure to do the things he can do. Like, I'm going to rewrite my advice to him about declassification. I still believe to this day that is the most powerful weapon. Like I wrote in that open letter in November, I said, the secrets are the swamp water that swamp creatures swim in. It both protects them and controls them. As long as they do what they're told, they all become millionaires, right? Every congressman becomes a millionaire. But if they get out of line and don't do what they're told, they can be exposed and destroyed. So the best way to drain the swamp is to drain the secrets, declassify all the dirt, throw all the skeletons out of the closet into the street for everyone to see. The truth will set us free. And think about this. Look at how J. Edgar Hoover stayed in power for life as the FBI director because he had dirt on people. No one dared to try to fire him. And that was back in the days of wiretaps and file cabinets. What's it like now with the NSA with all this complete, total information awareness?
So, Stu, the mess that we're in is so big. We believe here at Coach Dave Live, we believe certainly there's no political solution to a spiritual issue, which is what it is that we're dealing with. But as a guy who's really kind of swam in that swamp a little deeper than what most of us have, will these guys not do the right things, Stuart, because they're just wrapped up and caught up in Republican good, Democrat bad. That's a bunch of bunch.
Which guys? In the Trump administration?
Yeah.
I believe in President Trump. And look, when he got shot in Butler and then jumped up and reacted like a warrior, you can't fake that. That's real. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why I put that tattoo on my arm. But that scene of him with his fist in the air is on my forearm. I still believe in him. But he is, once again, he is surrounded by what? By lawyers. And what are lawyers like? Risk averse, cowardly, arrogant. They think they know everything. And what are they concerned about? Their own personal power and prestige and wealth. As a rule, there are good lawyers. I think Peter Chicken's a good lawyer. I think Mark McCloskey's a good lawyer. That's why I'm with them for our lawsuits. And Peter Chicken the other day walked our pardon applications. Thank God for him. Right into Ed Martin. I think Ed Martin's a good man. So there are exceptions to that rule, but there's still the problem of a systemic legal, like the modern Pharisees, right?
Yeah.
They kind of are. So, the keepers of the law.
President Trump can't even get the Republicans to go along with him, right? It's amazing.
Why do most people become politicians? That's why, the other day I gave a speech and I said, look, we don't have time to screw around. We got to purge out all the whiners out of the GOP. We got to purge out all the weenies and cowards. Even if they know what's right, if they're not courageous enough to do it, then they become useless. They may as well be lefties. What's the difference? Yeah. So we have to make sure we run people for office who are courageous. So I told them, look for someone, like a good example here in Texas was Shelley Luther, a lady who owned a hair salon, refused to shut down her hair salon when the governor told her, you know, told everyone that shut down, you know, no law, just the governor's edict, Governor Abbott, another snake. So she said, no, I'm not going to shut down my hair salon. This is ridiculous. My girls need to work. And a judge said, I'm going to hold you in contempt. She said, well, go right ahead. And he did, threw her in jail. So later, the Supreme Court of Texas ruled that was improper, and she, there was no law, it was illegal detention. So she won. Well, she's now in the state legislature in Texas. That's the kind of person we want in office. Someone that you can look in their history and find an example where they stood up to their own harm and did not back down. That's what you want. If you can't find that in their background, do not support them for office. I'm just telling you. I don't care how good they talk. I don't care how slick they are. They can quote, you know, Ayn Rand, and they can quote Ron Paul. But if they don't have a evidence of courage, what's the phrase?
That's right. That's right. Yep. They don't need gravel in the gut, that's for sure. Judah, come on in.
Yep.
Hey, Stuart. Thanks for your stand and what you're doing. Obviously, you just hit the nail on the head. And the problem is lawyers. You know, Ivan Ranklin talks about a famous lawyer. People don't even realize he's a lawyer. But that is a man who committed treason. His name's Mike Pence. And so when we get into this, what's wild is this structure that comes all the way down from the Bank of London and these Freemasons. You know, Mike Pence, in terms of the oath that they take, the reason why all this stuff's going on is because these people swear to a secrecy where they can't speak publicly about the oath that they took to these man gods. And, you know, obviously you guys were a direct threat to that because you're putting these judges on display because they're the ones that report back to this structure. And this structure is what needs to be exposed. Thank you for standing up and doing what all the rest of the people in the world want to do. And what it was you stood for integrity. You stood for what was right and you didn't bend. And that's the most important part. I love the fact Colonel Ranklin does not bend when he tells the truth. Yep. And I just appreciate you guys.
No sweat. And I'm not the only one that did that. Just to be clear, many other guys also rock solid. In fact, Ivan Ranklin and I, we teamed up in front of the DC jail when I first got out that first night. We went right straight there because they were not letting some other J6ers out. We went there and joined the protest. That's where I first met Ivan. And then we went 2 days later, went into Congress to go advocate for Jerry Brown's release. We went and visited the congressman in Jerry Brown's district in Florida, Gus Bilirakis, there with his super staff. And then we like held court in the hallway because the media saw us and mobbed us. Yeah. So we just held court. We're like, you know, the election was stolen. This was a fraud. COVID-19 was a setup. We just went through everything. And then Judge Mehta, my judge, saw that, lost his friggin' mind, issued an order that that myself and my co-defendant oath keepers were now banned from being in Washington, D.C. or in the Capitol. And I'm not sure how he thought I'd get into the Capitol without going through D.C. And he thought I'd parachute in or something. But he just, you know, and it made it very clear what he hated was my free speech. I went back to Congress peaceably. I didn't kill anyone. I didn't attack anyone. I went there and talked to people. And he didn't like that. That's why I tried to shut that down. So made it very clear it was all about free speech the entire time. But Ed Martin stepped up and issued a motion that said, A, you can't violate people's free speech like that. You can't target these men because of their free speech. You can't exclude them from Washington, D.C., being able to participate in a political process. You know, B, you're not respecting President Trump's intent. His intent was none of them are supposed to be on any kind of restrictions once they're released. Well, I was supposed to be an 18-month supervised release. Like I would be stuck in, that's why I have a California phone number. I was going to be stuck in California where my cousin lived. And I would be, you know, couldn't leave the state without permission. I'd be restricted on what kind of websites I can go on and social media, et cetera, et cetera. But so when Ed Martin stepped up and read the riot act to the judge, he backed off. So all that stuff went away. So once again, a man needs free will, God will just be good.
So Stuart, look, we got about 5 minutes left here. What do we do, man? That swamp is so deep. And I mean, that other side is so vicious.
Right. Well, here's what I would say. For us, our obligation, like the founder said, duty is ours, results are God. So mm-hmm. we have our duty. We must fight all we can in every way we possibly can. And I would say the focus, like focus of effort, local, you've got to, in your county, you've got to purge the rhinos out and take over your county GOP, the county committees, central committees, and then take over your state party and purge out the rhinos and make sure you have clean elections, especially for your primaries. Like here in Texas, we have open primaries, it's retarded. Open primaries, same in Michigan. Yeah. I'm talking to some friends of mine in Michigan. Well, Democrats can come in and vote for the rhino, which is really another Democrat. It's ridiculous. Close your gang primaries, purge out all the rhinos, be ruthless. I don't care how nice the guy is, how long you've known him. You know, he's a nice guy. If he's not strong, if he's not brave, he doesn't understand the Constitution, he's not actually America first and stick to his guns, do not run him for office. That's the one thing. At the top, encourage President Trump to use his absolute authority to declassify. He could still do it to this day. And I'm going to rewrite that. And the other thing he can do is he could call all of us up as the militia. Every one of us is told to this day by federal statute, age 17 to 45, you are the unorganized militia. The National Guard is the organized militia. And us veterans can be called up until age 65. President Trump, on his own authority, using the statutes that are already there, no one can stop him, could call us all up as the militia and order us to organize into county militias. Have order us veterans to take lead in the counties to train all the other men, form us into county units across the country, and then deploy us to the border for some on-the-job training. He could do that right now, and he should. That would revitalize the militia on his command. Yes, after he was out of office, they will try to destroy it, but that's okay, because we are still, by then it's too late, right? Can I ring that bell? Everyone's already organized in militia units of every kind. That's what we should be doing.
Stuart, we just got a couple minutes left here, at least the live part of it. What can we do to help? Stuart, look, we know this. There are a lot of guys. I've got friends who've paid a horrible price. Horrible price. I mean, I don't care, folks. I don't care how long you'd be in jail. You're in jail 6 months, come back, try to rebuild your life, try to get a job, try all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's much more difficult.
What can we do to help, Stu?
Well, I mean, we all need, like I said, everyone should be, you know, help as best you can, help all the J6ers. While we're building our lives, a lot of guys can't get jobs. I'm blessed to be working for the DMUSA, but I'm just letting you know, it's tough. People are not donating because they think, oh, Trump won, everything's fine. You've seen donations dry up.
Well, Stuart, they think you deserve it, don't they? You run into that. You deserved it. You shouldn't have been there.
I don't believe, people on our side don't believe that. But people, A, they think, well, Trump's got everything. B, they also think, oh, they're going to get a big settlement. Well, right now, we're starving. And we're barely making it, just letting you know. So I'm almost homeless. It's got to say. Yeah, I'm with a good friend. Let me stay here with me for a little while so I can get enough money for rent. But this is the way it is. We're building. Like, I mean, you know, I lost all my veterans benefits. My disability payments are gone. I don't have that to fall back on. For 3 years, I worked for Oak Keepers. I had a salary as the president of Oak Keepers. I made $100,000 a year. That busted my ass. But that's all gone. So I've got 3 years of no income. I can't even, pay child support or anything to my kids. I can't do anything. So I'm just rebuilding. And we're all rebuilding. Everyone's like in the same boat. So yes, help them. And like I said, I would encourage you to donate directly to the individual gives and goes for the J6 defendants. B, support condemned USA. Okay, and you can go to givesandgo.com/C, as in Charlie, USA, to donate to Condemn USA. Because they turn around and help other people, and that's important. So that's what I would say right now.
Help
the J6 community. And hey, if you got a job, if you got a spare vehicle, the J6 Road Home Project with Danny Kidd, awesome lady down in Texas, she's helping to supply vehicles to J6er. They helped get me one. A lady donated. Her husband passed away with the fire captain. She donated his truck to me. So that's important. If you got a vehicle that you have a spare vehicle you don't need, donate it. Contact the J6 Road Home Project, and she'll coordinate to get that vehicle to J6.
Sure, we got to run the live portion. Just hang in there with us. Folks, this story is so deep. It takes months to uncover this thing. Hey, Stuart, I just want to say publicly, you're a freaking hero, dude.
You're a hero.
I want you. I want you to know that we appreciate it here at Coach Dave Live. Let's help him. See you tomorrow, folks.